Hey, good morning, everyone. This is the Pillage Pastor, and welcome to another episode of the Pillage Pastor. It is going to be somewhat of a cloudy Thursday today. We've had some sun, but we're creeping slowly into a real spring here in the inland northwest. And another busy day, another busy day getting out there. And before I do, I don't know about you, but I need to get my Jesus groove on. And so we're going to spend a little time in his word this morning, chapter 9 of John, drawing close to Jesus, seeing who he really is, what's his true identity, and what's our response in light of who he says that he is. That's what's next. Stay tuned. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? Verse 3, it was not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered. This happened so that the power of God could be seen in him. Wow, I mean, here's a positive guy, right? Jesus is always like, in some ways we see him as, I don't know, maybe the naysayer, the pessimist, and yet he turns this into an opportunity. I mean, this is how God looks at things. We must quickly carry out the tasks assigned to us by the one who sent us. The night is coming, and then no one can work. But while I am here in the world, I am the light of the world. I mean, I love this because, number one, he's saying, you know what? Like, think of it like this. Not like, even if it is possible, if that's what happens, I mean, and I guess I kind of believe that is possible, that sins can cause sickness. Sinning can cause sickness, and some of you might have outright examples of what that looks like. I do. I mean, I can think of ways that just living a life of sin has sickened my body, sickened my mind, sickened my heart. But Jesus looks at it as like this, is like, you know what? You're never too far gone. Sins do cause sickness in whatever way, to whatever measure, but this has happened ultimately. I'm an optimist, so that the power of God could be seen in him, displayed in him, worked out in this as a witness and a testimony to you as well as others. I used to remember that. Well, if I do sin, then I'll have a testimony to share. I'll have a story to share with somebody else. So if I do fall into sin and I live like, you know, bat out of hell, and then I come out of it, at least I'll have a story and I'll relate with more people. And that's backward thinking. It's backward thinking because, listen, that story first and foremost is between you and God. You and God. It's not like, oh, now I have a story and now I can make an impact with that story and I can relate with people, and who cares? I mean, ultimately, let God display his power in you, but it's for you personally. It's not necessarily, it doesn't end with, that second part of it. Yeah, you will have the ability perhaps to connect with who God wants you to connect with. But leave that to him. Ultimately, he's looking at us personally, and he wants us to be impacted by him personally. And that journey is long and painful. Long and painful to go do your own thing, especially for us who are backslidden believers, people who truly just took our relationship with God pretty seriously and then literally made a very conscious choice to walk away from it, depart from a life of faith. You might not have given up your belief in God, but you departed that life of faith to live like hell and then realize that you're being destroyed and you're miserable, and you're dying. And to come back, and he's like, first and foremost, I love you. I want to invest in you. I have hope for you. I am optimistic for you personally. I want to be with you. What can I do for you, Lord? Nothing. What you can do is just stay right here. Stay right here with me. But isn't there work to do? Like, you always give me an assignment. What's my assignment? Here's the assignment. Stay close to me. There's your assignment. Quit begging God for an assignment. Just stay close to him. God, what do you have me on earth here for? Just to love him, to love him, to stay close to him. And whenever you stay close to him, you're going to hear his daily assignments. You're going to hear his assignment for life, but that's not what it's all about, right? The work that you can do for God, Jesus says, is to believe in him. That's the work that you can do for God. That's the work that saves you, is belief in Jesus. You want an assignment from God? Believe in his son, Jesus Christ. You want an assignment from Jesus? Stay close to him, because he is the word and he will communicate to you on a daily basis. Don't get an assignment, run off people into the night. Run off into, you know, doing your own thing, because even if he said, hey, I've got an assignment for you, this is what I want you to do, just as he did as he appeared to Moses at the burning bush. I got an assignment for you, Moses. Don't go it alone, though. You're going to have to go in my power. Moses was only able to lead those people out of Egypt because of the works of God, not because of works that he had done in his own strength and his own power. And throughout the time in the wilderness wanderings, he was reliant on God every single day. He needed to hear from God in the same way that we need to hear from God and meet with God. You know, meet with God in that tabernacle. And remember, God was tabernacled in Jesus Christ as he walked on the earth. We need that. We need it today. We don't need our assignment. You've got your assignment. Love God with everything you've got. Verse 6, then he spit on the ground. I love this. Made mud with the saliva, spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. And he told him, all right, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back. And when he came back, he was seeing. Verse 8, his neighbors and others who knew him as blind, as a blind beggar, asked each other. Okay, so this is the blind beggar, right? This was the guy sitting and begging, correct? Some said he was, others said no. He just looks like the guy. He just looks like him. This can't be him. Look at him. He's jumping around. He's happy. He can see. His eyes are nice and bright. He has hope, right? Happiness. But the beggar kept saying, yes, I'm the one. Hey guys, I'm the one. That's me. Is this the guy? Yeah, I'm the guy. Is you sure that's the guy? Yeah, I'm the guy. They asked, who healed you? What happened? And he told them, the man they called Jesus made mud, and he spread it over my eyes, and he told me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. So I went and I washed, did what he told me to do, and now I can see. That's faith right there. It's faith. Unless the guy's like, dude, you just put mud all over my eyes. I got to get this off somewhere. And it's not like you can just go to the closest drinking faucet or bathroom and do that. I mean, the guy's blind, first. And second, where is he going to do that? He goes specifically to the place, is led probably to the place where Jesus told him to go, accompanied by others. It's like, this guy just put mud all over your eyes. But I've heard about this guy. I've heard about Jesus. So something is to this. So then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees, those who were teachers of the law, those who people would go to in those days, Jewish, supposed to be godly teachers who knew God's word, could dissect God's word. You know, the prophets, words of the prophets, words of Moses, because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him. The Pharisees asked the man all about it. So he told them, he put the mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see. All right. So these guys have already been freaking out about Jesus. They've already been super upset about everything that Jesus has done because he claims to be God. They want him dead, and because they're jealous. They want everybody to come to him. We are the holy ones. You come to us to meet with God. You come to us. You don't go to anybody else. We're the only ones who can instruct you in the ways of God, right? And they're like, you can't do any work on the Sabbath, a Saturday, right? You can't do any work on that day. It's a holy day. It's a day set apart. It's a day for rest. And you're not allowed to do any work, even if it's a good work. You can't do it. You can't heal anybody on the Sabbath. That's how whacked out these guys had become. You know, they didn't start out that way. It really was meant to preserve the words of God, preserve the ways of God, instruct the people of God. When they were taken into captivity, they were no longer near a temple. There was no longer opportunity for sacrifice for so long. And the Pharisees came about to preserve all that God had done, to allow people to draw close to God. But they had become so arrogant, so prideful, so dead. They were dead. They were spiritually dead. Their minds were numb to the true things of God. Everything they had studied, it just became a text to them. It just became education. It became a degree. It stopped being, let's help people get close to God. Let's draw close to God so that we can help people get close to God. What are all these prophecies talking about? Who will the Messiah be? We're going to keep a good eye out for this Messiah, this God-man. And no, we have no ill intent. No, we're not jealous. We want to see if this really is of God, because if it is, we accept it. We want to embrace it. But they never could embrace this Jesus, who they said is not from God. Verse 16, for he is working on the Sabbath, they said. But how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs? So there was a deep division of opinion among them. So even them, they're trying to figure this out. They're trying to figure out what is it? He's got to be demon possessed. He has to be working in the power of the devil, Beelzebub. He has to be doing some kind of magic trick. He has to, I don't know, he's deceiving tons of people. Where did the guy come from? Maybe he's a Samaritan. We don't know. I mean, they didn't even know all of his family history at this point, because they would be able to kind of line up, connect all the dots, and see that he was fulfilling prophecy all along. Verse 17, then the Pharisees again questioned the man who had been blind and demanded, what's your opinion about this man who healed you? All right, that is a question we're going to even come back around to at the end of the chapter, which we're not going to finish today, but let's take a break. Stay tuned. And so, who do you say that I am is a question that goes out to every single one of us, and a decision has to be made, and it has to be made before we drop dead in this life, or are taken out in this life, or die of old age, a heart attack, cancer, a stroke. I mean, who knows what's going to go down with each of us, right? I mean, that's depressing, right? But the thing is, it's going to happen. And just because you ignore it and don't want to talk about it doesn't mean it's not right around the corner. Life goes fast, people. And if you don't stop and look around every once in a while, you're going to miss it. And what Jesus doesn't want you to miss is who he is and his desire to impact your life in such a way that you will glorify him, being so grateful, having your eyes opened like this guy's eyes were opened, where he can see clearly. And he's like, man, I gotta have an answer for who I believe this guy is, because we all have to have an answer. And Jesus is like, all right, yeah, who do you say that I am? So the Pharisees, these teachers of the law, way back when, they're on the scene, and Jesus is going around healing people. He's making these outrageous claims about his identity and who he is. They're wanting to kill him. This guy gets healed. Jesus slapped mud on his eyes. He went and washed away the mud. Next thing you know, he could see. And that's not, the only time that we'll ever see something like this. We see this similar circumstance with the apostle Paul, who formerly was Saul, on his way to Damascus to persecute Christians. He's blinded by the light, and on. So you know the story, or go read the story. But this man is asked, who do you believe this guy is? Who do you believe Jesus is? Because we're trying to figure it out. We don't like the guy, is what they're saying. The man replied, well, I think he must be a prophet. He must be a prophet. Because I don't know a whole lot. I mean, I didn't know what he can't do. I haven't heard a whole lot of his teaching, perhaps. Like, I just experienced this. Like, I have had very little time to process who this guy is. So he's got to be a prophet, because only stories we know of in, the Old Testament, only people that we look up to, our ancestors, prophets and they could heal. So that's the only connection I know about. He doesn't make him out to be a sorcerer. He doesn't make him out to be a demon-possessed man. I mean, power just rocked through his body. He experienced something amazing. The Jewish leaders still refused to believe the man and believed that he had been blind and that he could now see. So they called in his parents. They're like, we need to really figure out, is this guy tricking everybody? Is this guy faking it? So we need some testimony here. And they asked them, is this your son? Was he born blind? If so, how can he now see? And his parents replied, well, we know this is our son. We might not like, no, that's mine. Yeah, might not like the guy. He's like, he's done his own thing for so long. Nothing like that's in the text. But we know this is our son and that he was born blind, but we don't know how he can see or who healed him. So we don't know what's going on here. I mean, we just like heard about this and you guys called us in here. Like, what's going on? And they're like, ask him. He's old enough to speak for himself. All right. Why are you calling us here? Just ask him. So they didn't even, they're like, why are you involving us in this? Why are you involving us in this? The connection I make here immediately is that our parents, our family, our friends, our pastor even is not responsible for our faith and our surrender to God. There's no one else. Jesus is not going to call you before him someday after you die. And you're standing before him and he's like, I'm going to call in your parents. I'm going to call in your pastor and start asking like, hey, was this a good guy? Like, does he really believe in me? Has he really experienced me and experienced my healing in his life, both body, soul, and spirit? Like, you know, what's the deal? There's not going to be anyone calling parents in to vouch for you and what has taken place in your life. Your soul authority and your soul source of judgment will be God, and he will know who you are and you will know him. And there's still that possibility where you experience a miracle of Jesus, never truly surrender him. You're even in the church, but you're still doing your own thing. You're not surrendered. You don't develop your relationship with him, and you stand before him and he's like, I never knew you. Get out of here, leave. And you're like, but we did all these things for you. We even did miracles. We experienced your miracles, Jesus. And he's like, no, I don't know you. You might know me. I don't know you. There is a difference. You can study God all you want. You can study Jesus all you want. You can study your Bible all you want, and it doesn't draw you into a personal relationship with God. It could strictly just be a knowledge of him. I know you. I have a knowledge of you. And Jesus is like, I didn't ask you to have a knowledge of me. I asked you to have a relationship with me. This man is deciding in the same way we have to decide. But what's his answer? Well, I think he's a prophet. His parents are saying, we're not responsible for his faith. We're not responsible for his answers. We're not responsible for his healing. We're not responsible for any of this. We don't know why you've called us in. So for the second time, this is verse 24, they called in the man who had been blind and told him, God should get the glory for this because we know this man, Jesus, is a sinner. So take your eyes off of Jesus, they're telling people. Put your eyes on God. If anybody's responsible, if it is a work of God, God's responsible, but Jesus is not because he can't perform miracles if he's a sinner. Verse 25, I don't know whether he's a sinner, the man replied, but I know this, I was blind and now I can see. I was blind and now I can see. That's what it ultimately comes down to. I mean, see, I will say this, and you might not like that I say this, is that this kind of stuff still does happen today. He still moves in people's lives. He still heals in order to say, it's me. I love you. I want you to live your life with me. I want to live a life with you here on the earth. You were built for that. You were meant for that. That is your purpose. You were created in my image. Live out your purpose. Live out your image in the family that you belong to, a spiritual family. right? I want to adopt you into my household, and I want you to know where you're going when you die, without a doubt, know where you're going when you die. And so I want to give you that testimony, that undeniable proof that I am who I say I am. I want you to know, I'm going to ask you, who do you believe that I am? And I will give you opportunity to experience my power and my hand in your life. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? You know, because every evening I like to watch Sasquatch and Bigfoot videos on YouTube. It's kind of my outlet. It's the thing that I do. So I'm sitting last night, you know, I'm watching some YouTube video and drinking my Diet Pepsi and you know, and eating my popcorn and watching this. And I'm like, you know what? All the footage they got of the Sasquatch Bigfoot creature up in my neck of the woods, it's all blurry. It's either blurry or it's, you know, it's out of focus. The camera's always bumping around. And he's walking in a grove of trees. You can't get a good look at him. He's either ducking behind trees, you know, rolling around. I don't know what he's doing, rolling from bush to bush. I don't know. There's not a lot of good footage of him. And I'm like, you can't really identify, like in 90% plus of those videos, you can't even make a correct identification of what you are seeing. All right. Jesus, God, actually, believe it or not, he's not like that. If you want to see him, you will see him. If you want to experience him, you will experience him. And what he's doing here in public, in this space, in this book, in this chapter, in these verses that we're reading, is he's stepping out into the light and he's telling you, I am. I am. Remember that powerful statement from the Old Testament? That's how God identified himself to Moses at the burning bush. I am has sent you. And Jesus is there like, who are you? And he's like, I am. Be more elaborate. Like, tell us more. Well, I and the Father are one. Well, we don't understand that. Tell us more. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You've seen God if you've seen me. Oh, you're just being too confusing. Be more clear. The works that I do are the works of the Father. Oh my gosh, why can't you just tell us how it is? Before Abraham was, I am. And he goes on and on. All these statements about his identity, and they still don't get it. So he's not like a Sasquatch or a mysterious mystical being or person hiding out and then calling out, hey, I am the Son of God. No, he stands out there and he tells you so that there should be evidence and proof from a people who experienced him in history. And you don't have to just look back and believe that Jesus, but the same Jesus is alive and at work today, all around us, in our hearts and minds, in the lives of his people. You can experience this man. You can experience his healing. This is the Pillage Pastor. Grace, come down for such a sinner as I, and for such a sinner as you.